Welcome back, everybody. It's Tobin and Leroy here with you, 560 WQAM. It's time to talk to our guy from the Locked On Heat podcast, Wes Goldberg, going to join us here on the Toyota of Hollywood guest line. Shop 100 Toyotas each way. Oh, hello, Wes. Good to have you on, buddy.
Are you exhausted? What's going on, guys?
Wes, are you exhausted?
I am so tired. I was just sitting here daydreaming about a nap, dude.
I just want to take a nap.
Here's the worst part. Can you honestly explain, with all this stuff going on, why you're exhausted? You're just exhausted because you're tired of this, right?
Yeah, I'm tired of this, and it's first world problems, too, where you're just always, like, checking Twitter. Is something else breaking? I've been on the trade machine. I feel like the trade machine owes me money at this point.
Yeah.
So long. It's definitely first world problems. This is not hard labor. This is just trying to come up with trade ideas and monitor the trade situation and talk and report and do all these things. But it's just like a lot of mental stuff,
yeah.
Right? Because every day it just feels like it's something different and you kind of have to wrap your head around it.
Well, let's get your head wrapped around it, because I guess there's some kind of new twist to all trade fodders. And by the way, Wes joining us on the Toyota of Hollywood guest line shop. 2,000 Toyotas on sale at one location, Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan, toyotaofhollywood.com. So, yesterday, it was reported that, I guess, the Kings and De'Aaron Fox's camp are now open to business on all this type of stuff. And, you know, the first preferred destination is apparently San Antonio, because he wants to go team up with Wemby. But obviously his relationship with Bam Adebayo is going to get Heat fans in a little bit of a tizzy.
Hold on.
First off, do you see any scenario where this Jimmy Butler drama could be weaved into the De'Aaron Fox whole sideshow that's now going on? Or does this have to, even if he wanted to get into the game, this has to be its own separate entity?
Well, if there is a scenario in which the Jimmy Butler thing can kind of be layered on to this whole De'Aaron Fox situation, Pat Riley and Andy Ellisberg are the people to figure that out, right? They have relationships across the NBA. They have worked with almost every front office in every capacity in some way, shape, or form over the last decade. And so they are sort of, I kind of always joke, like, somebody has to tell Pat Riley and Andy Ellisberg that you're allowed to do one for, like, one team trades or two team trades. Like, every trade they do is always, like, multiple teams for the most part. So they're the experts at this. If you're the Heat, you've got to call and you've got to ask, like, all right, look, maybe we can get this stuff for Jimmy Butler and then send this stuff over to Sacramento combined with some of our own stuff to go ahead and get De'Aaron Fox. And then it just kind of becomes, all right, does De'Aaron Fox expand his list of preferred destinations the way that these things typically work with these star players? Is they kind of target one and then that destination list tends to expand afterwards? I can't imagine that De'Aaron Fox would be bummed out about playing with Bam Adebayo in Miami. So if that were on the table, I think De'Aaron Fox would be happy to do it. That's just guessing. But the other big problem is, like, is San Antonio, we keep hearing that De'Aaron Fox wants to go there. Do they want to shake things up in that major of a way in the middle of a season, right? We don't know that. We haven't heard anything from the Spurs side of whether or not they even want De'Aaron Fox. De'Aaron Fox feels like he's young and fits the Victor Wembanyama timeline, but he's 6 years older than Victor Wembanyama. Is that really the guy
that
they look at
older
as being the guy there? So there's still so many moving parts. I'm sure there's more surprises here, but to answer your question, Tobin, like, yes, the Heat, there's got to be a non-zero percent chance that the Heat can get involved and basically turn whatever this Jimmy Butler disaster is into lemonade. And if that ends up being De'Aaron Fox, and it'll probably be a little bit of a minor miracle, but it can't be impossible. I don't think we could say that.
Do you feel like De'Aaron Fox, let's put the Jimmy Butler aside, he moves on, they don't get that much except expires, whatever. The Heat and now where they're going to be at as a franchise, is De'Aaron Fox good enough to be like, we'll give you Kalawe, we'll give you Nico, we'd switch out Tyler? Or is he a needle mover like that, where, like, you would consider up giving up major pieces of what I guess looks like your future now? Where do you think he lies as a star in that regard to what to give up for him?
Yeah, that's a great question. Me personally, Tyler Hero would be untouchable. And Khalil Ware would actually be untouchable. Because the whole idea is you're moving Jimmy Butler. And what happens when you move Jimmy Butler? You need to identify your next star. And whether or not it's De'Aaron Fox in Miami or not, Bam Adebayo is the face of the franchise going forward. And whatever you have to do to make Bam's life easier, you've got to do. And the number one thing, as we just heard from Bam the other night, is play him at power forward, play him next to a seven-footer who could space the floor just like Khalil Ware. He, to me, is sort of central. This might sound crazy, but to me, like, he is untouchable unless you're getting something like Khalil Ware back. The Heat need that kind of prototype in order to maximize what it is that Bam can do. And with that being said, like, okay, if that's the model going forward, then you got to figure out what fits into that. But I don't think you can move Ware, and I don't think that you can move Tyler Hero. He's having an all-star caliber year. To me, you want his spacing. Like, De'Aaron Fox is a great offensive player. He is not a respected outside shooter. And so you need Tyler's spacing, maybe even more so, if you get De'Aaron Fox.
So he basically plays a similar game to Jimmy.
De'Aaron Fox?
Yeah.
I mean, he's more aggressive as a scorer and obviously not the defender, but in terms of, yeah, inside the three-point line, 100%. He's aggressive. He's got this great feel in the paint and all this stuff. I think he could be tremendously helpful. And for the record, I if you add De'Aaron Fox to Tyler Hero, Bam Adebayo, and Khalil Ware and figure out whatever the rest of it is, I think that's a team that can compete for the Eastern Conference Finals every single year. And so I would go pretty far in what I would be willing to include. The distant first round picks, the swaps, all that stuff, throw it in there. A couple of the young players, you probably have to throw that in there too.
Probably have to throw in Nico though.
Jaime Jaquez is from California. You know, Nikola Jovic, I think, has value across the league. Like, these are all guys who have some value. You'd got, I think it's worth at least exploring, but again, like, the key is we're losing Jimmy Butler. What that would have to be the central part of the package. Can I get a couple of role players back and maybe a couple of draft picks back? And that's really the central part. And I'm just sort of adding stuff that I already have from the Heat to that package. Because if you're losing Jimmy Butler, I think if you're the Heat's front office, you got to say, well, we can't lose Jimmy Butler and then also include the rest of the future in order to get De'Aaron Fox. You're probably trying to find a middle ground there.
Wes, has Jimmy done just about everything possible to just diminish his value? And why would you do that?
You know, every time I feel like Jimmy Butler has run out of cards to play, he pulls another one out of his sleeve, right? And he's like, well, boom, I'm wearing Phoenix Suns colored shoes now. And you're just like, man, I didn't see that one coming. I respect the creativity. So I'll never say that he's run out of moves. I'll never say that he's found ways to completely diminish his trade value. But for the Heat suspending him indefinitely, they've essentially mitigated that risk as much as they possibly can. You know what you can't do? If you're suspended, wear different team's colors and dye your hair in a trolley way while you're on there. You know what you can't do while you're suspended? Walk into a press conference after an Indiana Pacers game and tell us that you can't find joy on the court anymore. Like, you can't do all these things if you're away from the team. You can't make the plane late because you're not even invited. Like, these are the things you can't do if you're suspended from the team. And so we'll see. Right. I mean, he's still got his social media presence. I don't know how much the Heat care about that, but maybe other teams care about stuff that gets posted out there in terms of diminishing his trade value. But look, the Heat clearly have come to the realization that Jimmy Butler is not worth much anymore on the trade market. And, you know, you have Brian Windhorst saying on ESPN the other day, the Heat are going to trade him. It sounds like there's offers out there. It might just be at this point, Miami picking the best of the worst offers that are out there.
Should the Heat have foreseen this?
Yes.
When they didn't extend him? And should they probably started this process sooner?
100%. As soon as they decided not to trade him or not to extend him, they should have been looking to trade him. And they reportedly got calls about Jimmy Butler and said, we're not interested in trading him. That to me was foolish and even naive. If this, I was saying on Locked On Heat, like, once you decided not to extend them, just trade them. The window's closed. Like, I don't know how a front office, as much as we might have fallen in love with some of the runs over the years, 2023 and all this stuff, like, the front office's job isn't to fall in love with those runs and live in nostalgia. It's to have a sober, ruthless look at this roster. And I don't know how you would look at this roster and be like, yeah, this team can compete with a Celtics team that just breezed through the Eastern Conference last year. The window was closed in the summer. And so just even that, let alone all the stuff that you know that Jimmy Butler is capable of doing and how uncomfortable he's capable of making teams in his history. Like, even besides all of that, as soon as you've decided we're not going to extend him because he's too old and we don't think he's worth it anymore, Then why is he on the roster? You should have traded him back then. And they would have gotten a lot more probably had they traded him in July versus trading him now in January or February.
Isn't it? It's like the guy who meets a new girl and everybody tells her she's done this in all of her other relationships. And you go, she's not going to do that with me.
No, there was definitely an organizational arrogance there.
Right. Like, he won't do that here. And I'm like, ha, silly humans. Like, Jimmy, go be Jimmy.
It is. And I think some of that, too, is a little overstated just because he's done it in past places that this was always going to happen. Like, you hear this all the time. Like, this always happens with Jimmy. He always leaves this way. This is more of a function of sort of the new salary cap and the economics of everything than it is anything else, right? Like his problem in Chicago, like he told Fred Hoiberg that he didn't like him to his face in Chicago. Like that's not happening right now in Miami. You know, in Minnesota, he looked around that locker room and said, oh, you expect me to be a third wheel next to Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins? No way. And he didn't respect his teammates there. In Philadelphia, he openly bristled with the coaching staff there and bristled with some teammates there and wasn't long for Philadelphia. So this was like, had the Heat just given him the contract, and I'm not arguing that they should have. I've argued against it. I think they were right not to give him the contract extension. But had they just given him the extension, Jimmy Butler doesn't burn all these bridges, right? Like this was literally just a situation where it came down to money, where all the other situations in the past were a lot of sort of other extracurriculars that were involved there because Jimmy was always going to get paid. Now he's not going to get paid by Miami. He's probably not going to get paid by anybody the money that he thought he wanted to get or was going to get. But yeah, had it not been for the new salary cap and some of the limitations and all these things, maybe the Heat do just say screw it and just give him the extension and figure it out later. But it's way too punitive now to pay those guys kinds of top dollar. And I think that's really what it comes down to. But yeah, I'm at the end of the day, that stuff to me is all on the side, like the personality of this and everything. As soon as you decided you weren't extending Jimmy Butler, you should have been shopping him. That's what the Sacramento Kings are doing right now. As soon as it became clear,
right,
we're not going to get this guy on extension with De'Aaron Fox, you start shopping him. You'd rather be early than late on these things.
And Pat usually is, though.
Months late.
Pat usually is with that. I mean, think of how many stars that he's traded before they started that decline. And for some reason with Jimmy, I don't know if it's because they had the conversations or what Jimmy said when he was going to come into camp and whatever. Like I don't know. Maybe he hit his blind spot because this is not like Pat.
Well, I guess the argument against it, though, would have been the idea that if you did pay him and you had to satisfy Jimmy Butler and knowing how Tyler's playing and if everything else would have come along, the Khalil stuff, would this have been better in a situation? And that's kind of more on the whole, all right, did they handle the relationship right? Because if you have a satisfied Jimmy Butler, yeah, he's probably only got one more push in him to be that guy. And that's still probably a roll of the dice. And the Heat, I think we're in a spot where they're like, yeah, well, you know what? Maybe it is just done.
Can I do a counter to that? And I understand the whole situation, and I'm not saying I would have gave him the contract. From the Miami Heat's perspective, they did not know Tyler Hero was going to be this. This is covering up a lot of why they didn't get rid of Jimmy early. And so now we're looking at it with Tyler playing the way he is and with Khalil coming in and with Bam getting to play a four instead of playing center. Now we're looking at it like, why didn't we trade Jimmy? But at the start of this, nobody knew how these things were going to play out, and we're kind of playing the result with Jimmy now.
And I would even argue, had you gotten this year from Tyler Hero, gotten a rookie of the year type of season from Khalil Ware, gotten Bam to play the four, all these things that have happened, and you gotten engaged Jimmy Butler, I don't think this team is sniffing the Eastern Conference Finals. I really don't think that they would have been that good because, like, let's be real, Jimmy Butler hasn't been awesome since game two of the 2023 Eastern Conference Finals. Like, it's been a while since Jimmy Butler has been playoff Jimmy. What?
No, Leroy. He's like staring me down.
because he knows why.
What?
This is, you know what this reminds me of? Is like when Dan Marino retired and then immediately the Dolphins defense finally got good. And they just sort of missed each other by a year or two. That's sort of what this is, right? Like they just, Tyler Hero and some of these guys kind of blossoming here, they just missed each other by a couple of years and had all this stuff kind of come together at the right time. We might be talking about a championship banner hanging in Miami recently. So Unfortunately, that didn't happen.
It was hard to ignore, though, like that win against Orlando. You know, finally they win a game like that, because it felt like every one of those games has blown up in their face. But the emotions that everybody had, you know, Bam and Tyler specifically hugging each other, you know, because it's one thing to say, hey, the torch has passed over to you, but it is impossible to do that with Jimmy still in the locker room. It felt like a moment for him. Do you feel like this can be a catalyst for them? Again, not to say that they're contenders, but, you know, just to have this at ease now, do you feel like that could be a turning point or a pivot point for this team, or are we still going to do one step forward, two steps back? They'll end up, you know, meandering around 500 all year.
So, yes to both questions, like all the above. I think this team will probably end up being right around 500 and end up in the play-in tournament. But, like, that almost is less important to me than what it looks like in the vibes. Like, I that to me is more important for this team. What really struck me in that Magic win, and that was the first time the Heat had beaten a team over 500 this calendar year. It had been since, like, late December, the last time that this team beat a winning basketball team. But what really stuck out to me in that game was sort of the clarity that you were talking about. I think clarity is such an underrated aspect in the NBA. Knowing what the pecking order is, knowing what your mission is on a night-to-night basis. How are we going to play? What is it going to look like? Who's on the court with us? Having Jimmy Butler, suspending Jimmy Butler, keeping him away from the team, like, the Heat had to quite literally play around him. Jaime Hakka is having to dribble around Jimmy Butler to get to the basket for a layup because Jimmy's just parking himself in the paint. Like, that was happening. Him not being on the court provides a little bit of that clarity, not just on the court, but in that locker room too. And then you saw, I think, in that game, Bam unleashed, being able to hold Paolo Banchero to 2 points, where at center he would have been just kind of wasted, kind of just banging bodies with Wendell Carter Jr. He's able to hold Paolo to 2 points in the fourth quarter while Miami comes back from that 14-point deficit. And you got Bam also on offense facilitating for Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero, kind of coming around those Khalil Ware screens on the other side, these like extended horn set that they're running all over and over again. In other words, you saw the identity of what this Heat team wants to look like and how it is that they want to play. And I honestly don't remember the last time we saw that so clear and so vividly. And that to me is the most important thing going forward, is that clarity, knowing this is what our identity is now. This is how we're going to play without Jimmy Butler. And then knowing, all right, now if this is how we want to play and this is how we're going to empower our star player in Bam Adebayo and our other star player in Tyler Hero, what are the other pieces now? Because now we know what the shape of this is supposed to look like. What are the pieces that we have to fit in next to those guys?
Do you feel the Khalil Ware buzz right now? What are you feeling? What this guy, very exciting, Wes. He's gone from a plus a gazillion to the favorite for rookie of the year. It feels like he's got eyeball popping plays every single game. Give me your most unreasonable thoughts with Khalil Ware right now.
I'm trying to think, like, what is this guy's ceiling, right? At the risk of hyperbole here, what's the prototype for a guy like Khalil Ware? Like, what's the best version of Khalil Ware? And I would say
Anthony Davis?
Yeah. Carl Anthony Towns is a good one. Like this version of Carl Anthony Towns, who plays physically with the Knicks, like that version of Carl Anthony Towns. Like these are, like Jaren Jackson Jr., these are perennial, yeah, like,
he doesn't shoot.
Caliber.
He doesn't really shoot, right?
He shoots.
Jackson shoots.
Yeah.
These are the kind of guys that I think Ware could, like, if he were to reach the highest heights of his ceiling, like, that's the kind of player that he could be. And when you look at today's NBA, that's the kind of player a lot of these teams need. I'm just so excited for him and Bam together. Like,
yes,
finally getting this together. Bam said it. He said, like, we saw what it looks like in the Olympics.
Yep.
That's kind of a crazy thing to say.
It is Anthony Davis
that he was playing next to.
And it's also crazy. It's also crazy they were all there. And you know Bam's wanted this. And it is one of the things that is strange is this took Spo so long, right? Like, there definitely had to be an earn my trust being on my roster, but very clearly his star has wanted this for a while.
Yeah, and look, I will say I understand why Eric Spoelstra was as patient as he was, right? Just because Khalil Ware did what he did in Summer League, that doesn't really mean anything to me. Like, Summer League was fun, but doing this against guys who are not even in the G League, that doesn't mean much to me. And then at the beginning of the year, like, it was, he got on the court a little bit. He was not very good. He was kind of lost defensively, was a non-factor on the boards. And even yesterday against the Magic, Khalil Ware gave up a rebound to the Magic And Eric Spoelstra almost brought Haywood Highsmith into the game and then sort of decided against it in the last minute and put and motioned to Highsmith to go back to the bench and left Ware in the game. And that ended up being the right thing to do. But that was sort of that early hook that Ware was getting earlier in the season. So I don't know that Spo was supposed to do it early. I think it's really easy to just kind of see what the results are now and be like, well, this would have been the same results had he played him in game 20 as opposed to game 40. But you talk to everybody like behind the scenes, he's done a lot of work. They love his work ethic. They love that the basketball IQ with him. They love all of it and the commitment to everything. But he was not this a few like a month into the season versus where he is now. So I tend to, if we've all sort of agreed that the Miami Heat have the best developmental program in the league, mm-hmm. then I do tend to just sort of default to them and just say, yeah, they probably knew what they were doing.
But here's the problem. By not playing Kalo earlier, you're actually hindering two people's growth. Because now you got Bam not being able to do the things that he does best. And that's the whole problem that I had with it, is that Bam's a four. He was always going to be a four. He was a hard worker, so you put him at five. But he's a four. If he can play four, he's going to be at his best. Shouldn't it be more important for your stars to play in the positions where they are best and not have your best players playing positions of need?
No doubt about it. And I do think that if you're an NBA, like if you're a front office coaching staff, you know, your job is to make your star player's life easier. And then the star player's job is to make the role player's life easier, right? Like that's sort of the trickle down effect on things. And so, but he tried, right? Like there's this idea that like Eric Spoelstra loves to go small. Every time he got a chance to try Kevin Love again next to Bam Adebayo, he tried it. It just didn't work. They brought back Thomas Bryant because they thought that maybe that could be a thing too. It just didn't work. They finally got to a point where they felt that Ware was comfortable. I understand what you're saying, Leroy, and I was there with you, man. I was like right before that Nuggets game, I was saying, this is the game. Here's where you play Ware and Bam together in order to guard Nikola Jokic. And then they didn't do it, and then a night later they do it against Victor Wembanyama and the San Antonio Spurs, and they win that game. So maybe you could argue that Spo's a little late on this, but I do think that it's important to kind of make sure that Khloé Ware is capable of doing it and that you're not just throwing him into the deep end and ruining, you know, his confidence or anything like that. You got to make sure he's ready to go, or else, you know, like I said, Eric Spoelstra has tried doing this before, playing Bam at the four with another center, and it didn't work, and he's had to pull the plug on it.
Yeah, your center can't be Kevin Love. He's 47.
He's very tired, but he's on a hell of an Instagram heater right now. He is. Wes Goldberg from the Locked On Heat podcast. Him and David Meal do a fantastic job. Go watch him on YouTube and all your podcast platforms. Anything else you want to plug, Wes, before we get you out of here?
Locked On Heat, that's fine.
All right, there you go. He'll be boots on the ground tonight, I'm sure, for Heat and Kaz as we're on our way to Vegas. So we appreciate you stopping by, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Wes.
Thank you, guys.
Take a break. Back after this.